It is simply a part of life that we have to deal with animals and plants living and growing in places where they didn't used to be. When you get right down to it, humans are an invasive species on the American landmass. We'll skip that discussion for now and focus on an insect that is traveling west across the country and creating a lot of concern along the way. The emerald ash borer is the insect. It is small in stature, it can fit on the head of a penny, but large in destructive power. Oregon has been preparing for the arrival of the EAB, as its familiars call it. Let's catch up on the preparations and the concerns on the emerald ash borer with Wyatt Williams, who's an invasive species specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry, or ODF. Hi, Wyatt. Thanks for joining us.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
So, as an invasive species specialist, I just have to wonder in general, how many creatures, both on legs and on roots, are on your radar at any given time?
Right. So, invasive species encompasses a wide variety of taxa, including invasive weeds like Scotch broom and Himalayan blackberry, which are well known in the forestry industry, but also invasive pathogens like white pine blister rust and porphyrid cedar root disease, which have been here for dozens of years, and some insects that are on the horizon, like emerald ash borer.
And I was looking at the map that the USDA puts out. It looks like the closest the emerald ash borer has come so far is Colorado. Does that match with your knowledge?
Yeah, that's correct. In 2013, emerald ash borer was detected outside Boulder, Colorado, and so now it's on the Front Range and it's spreading in that area.
How fast does it move? How many more miles does it seem to advance a year?
Well, on its own, it can only spread about 12 miles or so per year. So that would be a pretty big jump, in fact, for this little insect for its natural dispersal ability. But the problem with this insect and a lot of other forest insects is that it can be transported in solid wood packing material, such as firewood or pallets or wooden spools that hold cable. And also nursery stock, so trees and shrubs that we ship across the U.S., they can hitchhike on those things. And so we have some pretty big dispersal events, like the one in Colorado was over 1,000 miles, and that was thought to be from either nursery stock or from firewood.
And so are there quarantines in effect to try to keep the things that might carry emerald ash borers from being transported very far?
Yeah, correct. So that's a good question. There is a federal quarantine for emerald ash borer, and it prohibits all infested material from leaving that quarantine area. However, despite a huge public outreach campaign in the Midwest and eastern states, things are still slipping by this quarantine. And the federal government spent hundreds of millions of dollars on fighting EAB and other invasive forest insects and disease. But for EAB, there's actually a revised rule change that's going to is open for public comment this summer that looks like it'll probably be looking to drop the federal quarantine, which will mean that there's going to be a lot more stuff that could be moved across the U.S. that has emerald ash borer.
So that is the proposal on the table, is just to drop the quarantine, not to bother with it anymore?
That's correct.
Which I noticed from reading a couple of opinions online that is regarded as giving up on the part of the federal government. I mean, is that the essence of it? Is that the federal government saying, hey, we can't stop this thing, so why bother?
Well, I wouldn't say giving up, because there's still some pretty big federal programs that are aimed at integrated pest management. So that's kind of the next phase that we move into. Similar with Himalayan blackberry or Scotch broom, we can definitely set up a state quarantine, by the way. So I want to stress that Oregon can still impose a state quarantine, which limits importing those materials into our state. So we can do that. But at the federal level, they are not giving up on emerald ash borer. There's a robust biological control program that the USDA sponsors. And this is, in essence, going back to Asia, where emerald ash borer is native, and looking for its parasitoids, or these little tiny predators that feed only on emerald ash borer. And they've identified at least four species, and they've imported those to the U.S. into a quarantine facility. And after extensive research, they deemed that they were safe. They don't attack any of our native beetles, and then they've released these. And some of these parasitoids are starting to take hold in eastern states, and they can actually provide up to 35% mortality on emerald ash borer. So the federal government's not giving up on emerald ash borer. They are looking to maybe drop the quarantine, but they still have a program for emerald ash borer.
All right, so other efforts definitely underway as well.
Yeah.
I was trying to find, and actually was unsuccessful in trying to find where to comment. I mean, which is this under APHIS at the USDA or some other agency?
It would be under USDA APHIS, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the comment period is open yet. I just know that it's coming this summer sometime.
Okay.
So that's all I know about that.
We'll keep up with that. I was glad to hear you say extensive research when you were talking about using the parasitoids, because I'm sure a lot of people get this sort of Frankenstein-y feel up to a point about the idea of releasing new things into the environment to get rid of other new things in the environment, or at least to reduce their spread. It must be there's a lot of pressure on researchers to get that right, I would imagine.
Right, and biological control has been really refined over the 100 years since it was started, and it is actually very, very safe practice if done correctly. And here on the West Coast in Oregon, we have a quarantine facility at Oregon State University, and in California, there is a quarantine facility at Albany. And biological control is employed for weeds, for insects, and it works very, very well when done correctly. And we're only getting better as a society in that practice of biological control. So when things come to a new area, so when we get emerald ash borer, we get Scotch broom, oftentimes they arrive to this area without their host of natural enemies, these predators and pathogens that normally are found in their native range that help limit their population growth. And so that's the whole theory of introducing these biological control agents, is to restore balance to nature. And there's been tremendous success in some areas, like tansy ragwort here in Oregon. There was biological control agents introduced for that. And where it used to be a huge problem on the landscape, and now tansy ragwort in many areas is just another plant, and it's not causing millions of dollars worth of damage.
Well, in that case, Wyatt, what was the biological control? What came in to eat it or kill it or do whatever it needed to do?
Oh, well, there was several species. Cinnabar moth is probably the most well-known for tansy ragwort. It's a beautiful red butterfly or moth. But the one that has done the most control are these flea beetles, these tiny little beetles that feed on the roots and just really, really weaken the plant and make it less vigorous. It flowers less, it sets less seed. And as a result, the native plants in the area can have a level playing field as far as competitive advantage for sunlight and water and growing space. So biological control will never eradicate or eliminate a host, but it will just makes a level playing field for the native species.
And so the cinnabar moth and the flea beetles ended up being decent food for something else already in the ecosystem, or just didn't overtake their space?
So the cinnabar moth and the flea beetles, they found the tansy ragwort. They decreased the population of the tansy ragwort to a level where the native plants can survive in that system. So one question is, well, what, you know, those insects that are feeding on the tansy ragwort, what happens to them? They do become food. So they become food for some of our native and exotic animals. So spiders and rodents will feed on those. But for the most part, there is no big effects of having an abundance of those biological control agents. In fact, in some cases, it's beneficial. It could provide food for bats and other native species. So, but overall, biological control, very safe, and it's one of these tools in our toolkit for integrated pest management.
We are talking about invasive species and integrative pest management and all kinds of other things involving trying to deal with the critters in the environment that we didn't expect to be there. Wyatt Williams is an invasive species specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry. Our primary focus is on the emerald ash borer, or EAB, which is expected in Oregon at some point. We can talk about exactly when, and you can join the conversation on the exchange strictly by email at the moment because of the lack of our phone system being up. But join us at jx@jeffnet.org. So the EAB isn't here. And had there been any scares where you thought it might have arrived on some shipments or something, Wyatt?
Well, so Oregon has been looking for this insect for several years now, on and off since 2006. And we've never detected it in our official statewide surveys. However, we do know that a truckload of firewood that was traveling through Oregon that stopped at agricultural inspection station at the California border did have live emerald ash borer in it. So at some point there were live emerald ash borers traveling through Oregon and into California. But that shipment was confiscated and destroyed, and there have never been any emerald ash borers reported otherwise in Oregon or California, to my knowledge. But we're very vigilant, and we do this trapping program, like I mentioned. We set hundreds of traps every year with some of our cooperators, our local cooperators, and the federal government, and all of those have been negative, but I'm really excited to talk about this program that we developed, which is the Oregon Forest Pest Detectors. Oregon Forest Pest Detectors. And it's an interagency effort between my agency, Oregon Department of Forestry, the U.S. Forest Service, Oregon State University Extension, Oregon Department of Agriculture, City of Portland. There's a bunch of cooperators that have formed this education program. And we train park workers, city park workers, state park workers, foresters, arborists, anyone that works in and around trees on how to recognize emerald ash borer, so that if they're a dead tree fell in a campground and you have to clean up around a picnic table or something, these park workers know what to look for and they can report emerald ash borer. We also join forces with the Oregon Invasive Species Council. And the Oregon Invasive Species Council has this great tool called the Online Hotline, Invasive Species Online Hotline. So with your mobile device, these people in the bucket truck, an arborist or a park worker can take a picture and within 60 seconds log a report of a suspect emerald ash borer. And it goes to my desk and several of my cooperators, my colleagues. And so we've trained over 500 of these people, these professionals working in the field, and we've had a couple dozen reports, but luckily all of them have been negative.
Okay, all negative so far?
All negative.
Okay. So are you looking for things other than the emerald ash borer in those?
Yes. So in that training program of the Oregon Forest Pest Detectors, we also have a module on Asian longhorn beetle, which is another exotic forest insect that is in the eastern U.S., and it feeds on maples. And also Asian gypsy moth. We have one on gold-spotted oak borer, and we have a couple more that we're thinking about developing. But those, yeah, so we are training people on several insects, but emerald ash borer is our prime concern right now.
All right, so if somebody's a park worker, for example, somebody does spend a lot of time outdoors in a regular circuit, they'd be available for this?
Yes, and so they can go online and take the class at their leisure. It takes about 1 hour to take the class, and they can get continuing education credits for their professional license. So Society of American Foresters, you can get credits for International Society of Arboriculture. You can get professional credits. So, and this is a free class. So you can take this course online. It's about an hour. It's interactive with videos and PowerPoints, but also we hold workshops around the state where we bring the class to a community. And what's really neat is we have field courses. So we've gone through and done simulated emerald ash borer attacks in trees. We've climbed up in trees, we've drilled little holes and put all the little signs and symptoms of what would be an emerald ash borer. And then after the students take our class, we put them out in the field and say, okay, which of these trees do you think has emerald ash borer? And they get to test their knowledge right there in the field. And it's been really successful and very popular. Some of our classes have wait lists, and people are really excited about helping detect the next invasive species early.
So I mean, imagine a few people flunked that test, though, where you had the what looked like an emerald ash borer attack that wasn't.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised. After the class, there's some really characteristic signs. And so once you know what to look for, it's actually relatively easy. It's just getting the education on what to look for.
We're talking about invasive species management and pest management and the emerald ash borer in particular with Wyatt Williams, an invasive species specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And we just learned about the Oregon Forest Pest Detectors. You can join the conversation on the exchange by email only at the moment, jx@jeffnet.org. Let me get back to the EAB because, as you mentioned, we had a scare. There have been EAB at least passing through. Where did it come from originally? You mentioned it's Asian by native habitat.
Yeah. So it first showed up in the Detroit, Michigan area in 2002. And the thought is it came over on international shipping, probably on a pallet that wasn't treated, still had some bark on it, some fresh bark. And those insects emerged and looked for their host material. And there's plenty of ash trees in the Great Lakes states. And So it was detected in 2002, but we know based on some tree ring analysis of the trees that died in the area that it had been there since the mid-1990s. And so it was killing trees at an alarming rate. And there was a lot of effort that was mobilized immediately to try to contain it, eradicate it, but it was not successful. And it's just a very alarming how quickly it spread. So since 2002, it's spread to over 30 states. Just this year, it's been found in 3 or 4 states. And it's really hard to stay on top of how quickly and how far this thing is spreading.
I have the color map in front of me that shows where the detections have taken place, and they do radiate out from Michigan, obviously, but that's a lot of yellow showing the places where it's happened. Clustered generally around the Great Lakes, but all the way to the Atlantic seaboard.
Yeah, so Vermont, it was detected in 2018, South Dakota, New Brunswick, Canada, and Maine. Those are 3 new states and 1 new Canadian province that was detected already this year. And so it's killed over 100 million trees. And as of 2011, so this is already a pretty outdated paper, but a 2011 paper assessed $1.7 billion worth of damages already to this insect. So very costly, very quickly spreading invasive forest insect.
And it only kills ash trees, though. Is that right?
It only kills ash trees for the most part. And now it has been found in another landscape tree called white fringe tree. It's kind of a rare tree out here, but and also cultivated olive in the lab. Researchers were able to force feed emerald ash borer and get it to develop on olive. So that's kind of an alarm for anybody who grows olive. But as far as I know right now, in the field, in nature, they haven't seen it attacking olive. So for the most part, it's all ash trees, which in North America, we have 16 species of ash trees, 16 native species of ash trees. In Oregon, we have 1 native, and that's the Oregon ash, Fraxinus latifolia. In California, Fraxinus latifolia is also there, but also velvet ash. There's a couple more native ash trees in California.
A couple of questions here from email. Norman looks like he's in Ashland. Says, how do you decide when an introduced species has completed its cycle? I mean, do they ever die out, or are they permanently present in the environment?
Well, that's a good question. So things with emerald ash borer, unfortunately, by the time people detect them, they've already established. There's already a breeding population. So that's one of the reasons why we created the Oregon Forest Pest Detectors. We're trying to detect these things quickly, like within 1 or 2 years, so we can actually make an eradication instead of after 2 or 3 or 4 years when it's already got a foothold. But getting back to Norman's question, there have been plenty of cases with gypsy moth. So gypsy moth is an exotic species, and we in Oregon put about 15,000 traps annually in the state, and occasionally, almost every year, we catch 1 or 2. And these are things that are transported, again, with people. They're moving from the East Coast. They inadvertently bring an egg mass on their barbecue grill or their patio furniture, and those eggs hatch, and the larvae develop and turn into a moth, adult moth, and we catch those moths, but it's just 1 or 2. Now, they never gain a foothold. They rarely develop a breeding population. So in that case, we don't have to do anything. They just peter out on their own. There's been numerous cases, too, with other plants. A couple of years ago, we got a new state record in forestry called kangaroo apple, this new solanaceous, or same member of the tomato family, solanaceous plant on the coast. And there was just 1 individual, and we recorded it, but there were no other individuals, and so that was a new state record. So there's lots of cases where we get these new exotic species, but they don't establish, they don't form a breeding population.
But the emerald ash borer, you're afraid once it finds an ash tree, it's just going to go to town?
Yeah, and it's very cryptic. You only notice it when the tree is dead. So the tree takes about 2 to 3 to 4 years sometimes to die. And so by that time, the insect is already gone, and it's moved on, you know, to other trees in the area. So we're trying to detect this thing very, very early and get the word out. And that was part of the reason why to develop this statewide plan.
Mm-hmm. So, and the statewide plan was completed actually a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
No, we started working on it last year, January of 2017. And we had 7 planning meetings among all the chief agencies. We had a public comment period. We had a public meeting, and we had over 40 stakeholder groups comment, and it was just released in May. So we have, and for anybody who wants to read the plan, it's got a lot of great graphics. It talks about the risks and what the state is doing, but you can go to OregonEAB.info.
And we have a link to it, or will anyway, to the PDF. It is quite an attractive document and well put. It's the Emerald Ash Borer Readiness and Response Plan for Oregon?
Correct.
Okay. And so before we go, if people don't have ash trees and they're thinking, well, I guess this isn't the problem I have to worry about. I mean, when you take ash out of the ecosystem, what does it do to an ecosystem?
Right. So there's two costs for emerald ash borer. There's the economic costs and the ecological costs. And people might be concerned about both. So for the economic costs, ash can get very expensive to remove. And in the city of Portland alone, there's estimated to be about 9,000 ash trees. And with a simple calculator, there's a very nice online calculator how to see how much it costs to remove an ash tree and replant it with a desirable species. Anyways, for those 9,000 ash trees, it could cost over $50 million to remove and replant. And these ash trees, these 9,000 ash trees, could die within 10 years or even less. That's how quick this thing can move through.
Wow.
So there's that. And also, you've got to think about property value. If someone has a very nice, mature 30, 40, 50-year-old ash tree or a couple of them in their front yard, when you cut those down, it's going to depreciate your property value considerably. So that's the economic cost. But on the other side are these ecological costs. And where Oregon ash grows is on along these riparian areas. And if you remove all that those ash trees, you're going to increase stream temperatures and sediment in the stream. And that could have a whole cascading effect on the plants and animals that live in that area.
Okay, so best to keep the emerald ash borer out of Oregon, or at least keep it as under control as we possibly can. When it gets here, it hasn't yet. I want to make that clear. Wyatt Williams is an invasive species specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry. We'll link to the report, which is the Emerald Ash Borer Readiness and Response Plan for Oregon, and the Oregon Forest Pest Detectors on our website, jeffexchange.org. Wyatt, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me.